Welcome to Authenticate This, the cybersecurity leadership podcast for CISOs and identity leaders navigating the complex world of identity. From real-life breaches to internal missteps and everything in between, we bring you authentic stories, hard-earned lessons, and actionable insights to help you lead with confidence when chaos strikes. Our goal is to humanize identity, uncover actionable solutions, and explore the business of identity beyond the spreadsheet. This is Authenticate This, where identity meets leadership. Hi, I'm Tim.
Hi, I'm Aaron.
And you're listening to Authenticate This. So Aaron, it's good to see you, man. It's been a couple of weeks. Happy New Year.
Yeah, we got to spend a lot of time last year. And this year we get to hang out some more, which is going to be fun. I was just thinking about like what we should do for our resolutions this year. And I always think they should be fun. It's not just like, oh, I got to do this diet. I got to lose this much weight or whatever. It's like, for example, my wife and I are doing a resolution where we have to try a new restaurant once a month. So that should be pretty fun. And so I thought, hey, let's make sure you and I hang out at least once a month and do something together. Hence, now we've got this podcast. So for me and hopefully you, like our resolution could just be like, let's do this podcast once a month.
Love it. And that, you know what? That's actually one of my resolutions was to be more determined. I'm more determined to focus on the human side of identity, right? And that's the whole purpose of this podcast is to humanize identity and to dig into it. So I'm stoked that I get to see you once a month at a minimum for these recordings. We have a lot of guests lined up, but that's one of my biggest resolutions. So again, you know, it's been a minute. I saw you at Gartner. We learned a lot at Gartner, and I saw you at Band and Dunes also.
Oh, yeah, man. A lot of good golf. We had a lot of good shots, a lot of fun times. But the best story I felt like was the whole tsunami warning. What do you think about that, man? That was nuts.
Actually, that's a great leeway into kind of where we're going to go with this podcast, because that story perfectly illustrates people and how people react. So let me jump into it. So here's how it goes. There's 12 of us. There's 12 players. And we were playing a practice round at a new course called Shorties. We're at Band and Dunes. It's on the coast, on a cliff, over the Pacific Ocean, kind of near the Oregon-California border.
Beautiful.
Absolutely beautiful. It's early December. And you know, this time of year, we don't typically have bright, sunny days with no wind on the Oregon coast. But this was probably the best December day I've ever seen, weather-wise, for the Oregon coast. Anyway, there's 12 of us. We're all playing golf, practice round. All of our phones start buzzing, and it sounded like an Amber Alert, right? Bzz, 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 phones are going off, and we look down, and it says, hey, there was an earthquake 100 miles off the coast. Okay, whatever that means. Like, we felt fine, but kind of our radar was going off a little bit. And then a few minutes later, we got another message, and all of our phones went off again. Amber Alert, doesn't matter if you wanted the alerts or not, they were coming to our phones. And it said there was a tsunami imminent, right? And we all started like to look around. It was a little nerve-wracking, like, okay, there's a tsunami coming. Like, there was an earthquake, tsunami. We look out, the ocean's flat. There's no waves. There's no wind. It's sunny. It's perfect, right? But what do we do? And so there were a few of us, we started to react a little differently. A few of us were like, come on, like, there's no issues here. And then we're a couple that were fear-based and started to get nervous, right? Like one guy, Brian, he's literally looking for the high ground in the trees. He's like, we got to get to the trees quickly. And then there was a couple of you that were logic-based. Aaron, I'll kind of put you into that boat where you pulled up your phone and you're like, hey, the average height of a wave during a tsunami is 100 feet. And we're 120 feet on this cliff, so we're probably okay. But then the most interesting thing happened. Like, we're all debating, trying to figure out what we do. Then the sirens go off. And this, for me, was new, right? We've all had alerts on our phone. They're jarring, whatever. But when the sirens went off, it became real, right? And that's when Brian almost literally started to run for the trees, like, what is happening here? And so I think that perfectly illustrates the three types of people, right? You've got this logic-based group that are using data and information to make choices. You've got fear-based group that are making bad decisions because of it's fear-based, or they're reacting, they're overreacting. And then you have the group of apathy, right? The guys that just don't care, that were teeing up a ball like, hey, let's finish this round of golf.
I want to die playing golf at Band and Dunes. I'm pretty sure that was one of the quotes.
That's right. Like, hey, if I'm going down, this is the place to go out, right? But it's interesting, right? So you have these three types of people. These are all business professionals, and they all reacted to a very, very real and potential threat completely differently, right? Now, obviously, you and I are here. There was no tsunami. There was no giant wave. It was a false alarm. However, the way that we reacted is very much like how the people and the humans within our customers and the companies that we all work for react when there's a real breach, a potential breach, or a false alarm. And so the CISOs and the identity professionals that we work with, they have to be able to manipulate and control and coach and train these types of groups to do certain behaviors, right? It's not enough for a CISO to just buy the right products and put the right programs and procedures into place. They have to influence the people as well. And that's exactly what we're talking about. Here's a perfect example. Let me give an example and tie it to identity. So deep fakes are becoming more and more prevalent. For the last couple of years, we've seen deep fakes go from pretty easy to spot to damn good, right? I mean, these deep fakes nowadays, they have voice inflection, they have tone inflection, they have emotional responses, right? And these videos are really, really good. And so if you think about, as these deepfakes are getting better and better, it takes more than just buying products to combat against this. You have to change the culture inside the company. And so one of the things that I'm proposing that I say the best CISOs do is they influence the culture internally to create change. And around deepfakes, think of it this way. If the deepfakes are successful because people are afraid to push back, right? If your leader is on video and your leader says, hey, I need you to cut this purchase order to this organization today. And you see a video, you're okay. My boss told me to do this. I've got to do this. And that's how the bad actors are infiltrating, right? Because they know the culture within organizations. Oh, your boss says you got to do it. You got to do it. Now, if a CISO influences that culture to say, we can now push back internally, right? Let's call it the prove to me you're not a robot clause. Right. And I can just imagine now with our leaders and our bosses, right? Like imagine our CEO comes to us, Aaron, and he says, hey, I need you to do this report. Be like, I don't know, Jonathan, are you a robot? Are you real? Like, before I do this activity, are you real? And that's going to happen. There's going to be pain points, right? Because the leaders are going to be like, God damn it. Everyone's trying to prove that I'm real when I ask them to do things. However, the outcome is just as good, right? The outcome for the CISO is like, hey, fewer and fewer breaches. Right. And if they happen, they're less impactful. And, you know, throwing tools and processes is absolutely necessary. By the way, I'm not poo-pooing all over that because you and I make a living by selling and deploying and managing identity tools. Mm-hmm. However, the CISOs that we work with, the very, very best ones, are the most successful because they influence the human culture internally.
Right.
And outcomes are the same. It's harder to measure, but the outcomes are the same. And so, that's the purpose of this podcast, right? We're going to talk about the human aspect and the human element and how to influence and change company culture internally. And we have a lineup of CISOs and identity professionals. They're going to talk just about that and the passion that they bring. It's actually very similar to your passion, Aaron. And when we first met, I know 5 or 6 years ago, one of the things I noticed was how passionate you are about identity. Where does that passion come from?
Okay, so I'm pretty passionate about identity, but not for the reasons you'd probably expect. A lot of people love the tools. I think like security is very important, but a lot of people love playing the defensive game. I'll tell you where I started, and that sort of leads to the rest of this. And that is just like many people in cybersecurity, I didn't major in cybersecurity. I actually majored in theatrical lighting design.
By the way, your lighting in your office looks amazing. You're on the Millennial Falcon, right?
Yeah, it is. Yeah. I just landed from space, a cold trip from Hoth. It's snowing outside. It's pretty nice. But yeah, so is doing the lighting design. It's a lot of the same problems we have in identity is you've got to do stuff really fast. It's all live, which means you've got to deal with humans. There's low budget, so you can only spend so much. And so in order to solve these problems, you have to have like tools to help do things faster, and you have to have processes that can be predictive in problems. So you're forecasting, or you're trying to imagine a problem, and you're pre-solving it before it could even show up. you're always going to have something that surprises you, right? But you can cover 80% of stuff. A lot of that is also true in identity. And when I think about those problems, it always comes down to the human aspect. If everything was ones and zeros, everything integrated well, I'd be fine. Even in tooling, people think about, oh, I just need to go connect it to System X. Well, in order to connect it to System X, I have to work with other security professionals on my team. I have to go work with the business. That business has their own objectives to generate revenue. So in order to get down, I have to go up. I have to go talk to my director, my VP, my CISO, who's got to go talk to their business line, C-suite, and work back down. It just becomes this whole political thing that if you don't understand people and you don't understand how your business or what drives and motivates your business, that simple integration never happens. And that's what I'm passionate about, is how do I bridge gaps inside of an enterprise so that we can make those very simple ones and zeros connect?
Yeah, no, I love that. I love the passion. I can feel it. Again, we're going to get the same type of passion or even more unique stories from our customers, right, who are coming in and going to help us kind of articulate some of this with real world examples. Do you have any learning experiences, recent, let's just say, failure stories, right? One of my favorite types of stories is a failure story, because it's actually a success story hidden, right? Where we made a mistake or we made a, you know, something bad happened, we failed, but we changed, we grew, and we built a process to not fail again. Do you have, those are my favorite. Do you have any stories off the cuff you like to tell?
Yeah, I have plenty about professional ones that I've probably learned, but I'll do a client one because it probably resonates with some folks listening in a little bit better. And I want to note too, what you said about failure stories. I've always been one to say, let's learn from other people's experiences. It's the best shortcut in life, right? You don't have to wait till you make your own failures, learn from them. As you often say, like you just said, it's a success story. So let me shortcut stuff. So here's a good example of a lesson to learn so you can shortcut it and look like a hero later. I was working with a client who brought me in after this whole issue. I was talking to a CISO who just spent millions of dollars to go implement a PAM solution and tool and in services, and they didn't go live. And here's why. So I get this call. We come in and do this mini just sort of business operational sort of assessment on identity for him. And he tells me, like, we just deployed this PAM tool, or we deployed it a year ago, or intended to deploy it a year ago, I should say. And after spending a couple million dollars on the PAM tool and then spending 6 to 8 months or so actually implementing that PAM tool, on a Thursday, we sent out a message saying, hey, this weekend, like, we've got this great, cool PAM tool. It's really exciting. We're going to go live with it this weekend. So we chose this weekend because there's not any real upgrades happening. It's not going to affect you guys. So we come in Monday. Here's the runbook of how you interact with the system, which it was inclusive of, I got to log in, I got to do MFA, and then I got to check out a password for a service account that's 32 characters long, and then I type it into the system. And it's like, oh, that's all great, because now we're going to be way more secure. Those passwords rotate every time you check it out. So you don't have to remember the password. It's just 32 characters and you just move it every time. And those of like the 200 or so folks in IT and security that email went to, 150 of them by noon Friday, so less than 24 hours later, had signed a petition saying, if you go live with this weekend, we will not show up to work on Monday.
Wow. Wow. Okay. So the CISO's job is hard enough, right? They've got to choose the right tools. They've got to implement those tools, procedures, policies. But if they don't get the people on their side, they can't be successful. So what was the outcome? What happened?
Well, because it's the millions of dollars. It's the trust you've lost in your team, because they're like, oh, you just do this? You just got all this buy-in from your leadership to spend the millions of dollars. And in this case, it was around regulations. Like, oh, we have to do this with privileged accounts. So it's fine. But the lack of communication early on prevented them from being successful. So when we came in, we're like, look, it's harder. It's certainly a lot harder to rebuild something after, rebuild trust. And so this was the lesson for this CISO. This has been, I don't know, probably 5, 6, 7, 8 plus years now, maybe longer than that, where the CISO is very focused on mandating. security. This is security. We have to do this. So everybody has to go and figure it out. The lesson the CISO learned, I think, was, okay, yes, sometimes we have to do something. And it's a requirement, either as a regulatory requirement, it's a security practice because it's going to help us save money on breaches, protect our clients' information, X, Y, Z. But if I can communicate the why we have to do this and to think about how do I make it as frictionless and as simple for my end users who are using these systems as possible, if I think about the people first, it becomes a lot easier story. The building in org change management, like communication plans, is part of that. So that's what we did. We built org change management communication plans. They were all catered to the specific audience, which happened to be a bunch of nerds. So we added in a bunch of like little nerd, like some Star Wars references to it. We also adjusted how the system was deployed. We did focus on the number of service accounts they had and the privileges assigned to them. We did some amount of shared accounts, and I shouldn't say like it's not shared, but we're sharing passwords. We instead used jump hosts. We basically treated the PAM tool like a privileged sign-on, a single sign-on tool where you go in and you click a button and it opens up. I don't have to go hand type in those 32 character passwords. We also integrated with the RDP tools, their local systems. So it was a little more work, but it became adaptable. And the whole team saw, actually made some of their jobs easier versus harder in many instances. And they understood the why.
That's perfect. So they understand the why, they understand the benefits to them, and they feel like they're involved. And that's exactly, you know, involving the human aspect of identity. Now that CISO learned a very, very valuable lesson, probably never made that same mistake again. But those are the exact types of stories we're going to bring on direct from the CISOs to hear, you know, their emotions, how they felt, what they were thinking, their process. And they're humans just like you and I. And so are the users that they're supporting. So I absolutely love that. So what's interesting, we're talking about CISOs and all this responsibility that they have. Have you heard of a trend? I've seen it a little bit now, but I feel like it's going to become more prevalent, of a chief identity officer, where they're going to carve out a C-suite role just for identity.
Yeah, I mean, I've seen it a couple of times. Actually, the first time I saw it was probably 3 or 4 years ago. Right, it was right before COVID. It sort of tapered off after that. And the reason why I feel like we're seeing that is because identity programs are so expensive and people are starting to see the need for understanding how a business operates and associating it back to identity. We are also seeing it because CISOs, they have so much on their plates, right? And identity is not small. You've got to focus on physical security. You got to networks, everything, right? So you've got infrastructure. So you've got so much on your plate as a CISO. Focusing on the changes for identity is also hard. The idea of having a chief identity officer or the likes allows you to also start to think about things outside of workforce. And so it's like CIAM focus and the business value of CIAM to organizations. You get this chief identity officer working directly with chief product officers and chief marketing officers to help with customer journeys. All of that leads to better or more funding for identity, probably better usage of that funding, more adoption within an organization, because you've got a true like top-down understanding as well as the bottom-up understanding within an enterprise, better integration from an or understanding from an applications as new applications get onboarded into an enterprise. You can think about identity as a service operating for your enterprise versus just mandating identity needs. So the list goes on, right?
Yeah.
That's part of that.
That's a cool trend. I hope to see more and more of that. And we are starting to see more and more of that. That's awesome. What other trends? I mean, I guess as an industry as a whole, where are we today? You know, it's January 2025. And where should we be going? Like, what are your thoughts as far as what the future of identity looks like?
Oh, that's good. I wish I had a crystal ball. I think everybody that is in the space or a space adjacent knows identity is growing and growing in size quickly. But like the chief identity officer, like we talked about, I've talked to a client just recently who I said, okay, what does your identity program look like? And they listed off that they had two different PAM tools. They're still trying to get off an old IGA tool and moving on to a new one. They've got two access management or SSO tools, one for CIAM, one for workforce. And they had an additional MFA tool that they were on top of that. And they just kept listing off all these applications, but they had two big issues. One, they never listed the people aspect. And so what are they doing from a process? what does their relationship within the enterprise look like? And they also worked integrating a lot of these tools within the applications. There's a Gartner survey that says something like 70% of the organizations that they surveyed only use about 25 to 50% of the functionality of their identity tools. I mean, this client was just like, I mean, it was probably sub 20% of the functionality, much less the integration points. And so all that to say, when I see these as part of where we're going to keep having issues with the two big components of any identity tool. And that is one, connecting to the endpoints, and two, are the workflows that move the data and objects between those endpoints. Both of those, the hindrances have to do with working with the business to make those two things happen. And the business, those tools that are purchased or those applications, those business tools, they're doing point of sale systems, right? Like they do all the stuff that they need to do for the business. They're not, those software vendors aren't thinking about identity first. And so for us to integrate with those systems, one of the hardest jobs of the CISO is I've got to go build those relationships with those business owners to then move it on. That's where I think it's going. It's going to continue to have software vendors focusing on breadth of functionality versus depth, which is a trend we've seen. So trying to focus or steer away from customization, focusing on being able to do more because this, especially with like Gen AI and stuff, the security threats are broadening up. So that's where I think it's going. I do think it should go somewhere differently though.
Yeah, where was that?
If the complexity is integrating with the endpoints and integrating with and the processes that go with them, our business teams don't necessarily have the in-depth understanding of identity. So we can educate them all and everything like that. But man, if I could change something about identity, I would want us to focus more on regulating the software vendors than we do the enterprises. It is so hard for the enterprises, man, to protect all of this data if they can't control it. And so, and they can't control it because they can't integrate with the applications. So you have to do these flat files and everything like that to integrate with the systems. So instead, if we're regulating the endpoints or the software vendors, we can say, okay, you've got to have a SCIM connector available. You've got to match these identity attribute standards, right? So here's how I have my data. Here's how I can control it. Here's what the data should look like. The biggest thing is authorization models need to be simplified. So you're always going to have some amount of fine grain, but to stop fine grain authorization bloat will help a lot too. And so this allows you to stop wasting time on customizing workflows, spending all this time to integrate with applications, and instead just focusing on moving identity data around. And then we can start putting identity built into systems. They can start working inside of, we can start leveraging IPaaS tools to do things versus just IGA tools, which make some operational efficiencies there too. So that's where I would go. If I could change something, it would be to really focus on the software vendors integrating identity into their platforms.
I love that. And I see that happening, right? IPaaS is becoming more and more popular. Software vendors are starting to, you know, implement more and more identity flavors within their tool sets. So I love that. So if you're a CISO and you're selling this model internally, what's the benefit to the human aspect? What's the benefit to the user or the benefit to the organization?
Yeah, the biggest one is it goes down to culture. The one, just about every organization feels that their identity team's understaffed. They do think that they're getting funding. So that's just on the identity team. On the business side where I'm trying to integrate with these applications, so say it's like SAP or something. SAP team, we also like SAP security teams as well, but they're constantly doing upgrades. They're focusing on adjustments for the business and changes to support the business. They've got a million modules they're trying to work within. They don't feel that they have time or bandwidth to one, work with the identity team, but two, to even understanding what the heck the identity team needs. They've got their own full-time jobs, so it's understaffed in that sense. And so if I can start to simplify what needs to happen in the same way that's happened with single sign-on and many aspects of single sign-on at the very least with some standard protocols, it becomes a lot less time to make these integrations happen. And the ROI is way higher, right? So I invest a small amount of time to be able to now do things like onboard a bunch of users faster. I can terminate users from a regulatory perspective. Onboarding is very important. I talked to lots of companies who it takes forever to onboard users because they have to register for MFA. You got to do all these things on their devices to make it match back to their identity or MDM solutions, as well as getting all the authorization set up and all the endpoints, which is a terrible experience for somebody joining a company. They just made a big life decision to change jobs. And the first thing they do is it takes them 2 weeks to even start their job. And they're just worried about like providing value. And so they start a new job, unable to do it and afraid that they just made the wrong life decision and it's going to impact their families. And so all of that, all of these things tie back into the human element and the culture of an enterprise if you're not simplifying identity.
I love that. I love that. I mean, imagine a CISO going in and selling that internally, right? Like a CISO can speak to a business leaders and say, your guys are starting and they're 2 weeks in and they haven't kicked off their job yet, right?
Yeah. Like,
most important moment for momentum with a new employee is day one. It's day one.
Yeah. There's a great book called The Influencers and they call them keeners. They're just the people who are keen. They're excited about starting their job. And so there's another good thing about that book too. We can talk about probably on a future podcast, but it is how do you find the influencers in your organization? Who are the people that are the loudest? Either they are those people who are fearful, they're logical, apathetic, like we talked about in your messaging earlier, but it is those that others listen to impact the culture of the enterprise the most. And so that's a struggle a lot of CISOs have is how do I get the person who is the naysayer, the loudest that everybody hears that impacts the culture the most on my side so I can get them to move on. Or kid, I can get the enterprise to move on in the right direction. Sometimes that's in your own C-suite, man. It's just not just the doers every day.
Yeah, that's why the very, very best CISOs do that well. It's not easy. It's not an easy task to influence those people, right? Especially the extremes, you know, the logic, the fear, and the apathy-based people. It's not easy.
No, I don't know. I think a CISO is a tough job. I love working with CISOs, man, but I don't know that I could do it. I'm very excited to talk to some more on this podcast around just like their personal experiences. So many of them are afraid. I mean, they all have like as part of their like packages often have some kind of insurance for themselves, right? For if a breach happens, how does that hurt impact them and their personal lives? I mean, CISO's got a tough gig, man, and it's getting harder.
It is. But you know, that's part of the reason why we're doing this podcast is to bring in the human side, because I believe that's the hardest part, right? CISOs have a lot of tools and resources at their disposal, industry experts and, mm-hmm. you know, subject matter experts, all these things. They have access to anyone they want, but what they really genuinely need is help with the people side.
Yeah. And I, with some of the CISOs, hopefully the first one we're bringing in, is really good at
that. She's amazing. I can't wait.
Yeah, she'll be on one of them. Hopefully it's the first one. If not, you guys will get to meet her, but she's incredible. It's one of those person that people like you'd follow into battle. When shit hits the fan, you want to be on this person's team. She's great. So I was just thinking like, if I'm a CISO, like I probably have gotten to go like look back at like, oh, I want to change this about my career. I think CISOs learned so much along the way about like what they would want to do differently, especially as a CISO, because their role has changed so much in the last decade. So for you, man, what about you? Like if I could go back or you could go back and change something about your career, what would you do differently?
You know, it's easy looking back and saying I would do this differently, but what I would 100% change is exactly what we're talking about, right? Like on the scale, the sliding scale of tools and processes versus people. I would say in the past, it's probably 80-20, more tools, more processes to 20% people. I would flip that or at least go 60-40, spend time and effort influencing internal change and culture change. That's what I personally would focus on. One, it's a passion of mine. Two, it gives the same or similar results without having to spend all the money, right? And so again, CISOs have to do more with less. And I think starting that way is the best way to go.
Yeah. I like the doing more with less because it's almost like what you're doing is preventing rework. I can't tell you the number of times, so we're on professional services, where I get brought in from a pre-sales perspective or something to come in and fix somebody else's problems. because they've already done it once. And like I said earlier with the Pam story, is going back and redoing something feels like it's telling your board and everybody, we've wasted the money. We've already wasted time doing this the first time. How do I change that narrative and be able to proceed forward? How do I learn from people's experience the first time? Stuff like that. So it's certainly difficult to not think about it where I am trying to solve the old problems first. I also think about it as almost flipped from you. So you say like you want to do the human stuff first. I feel like I've almost only focused on the humans. And maybe it's because it's not natural. Like I'm like, oh, tools are cool. So let me focus on the humans instead. And so like to counter what you were talking about, I always think about it as, and maybe this is back to my theater, like in carpentry and building sets and stuff. There, I can open up my toolbox and I've got 10 different hammers. There are 100 different hammers out there. And that's one of the best things about humans is they have problems and they solve them often using tools. And a hammer, there are so many kinds of hammers or different kinds of tools out there. They all can drive in a nail, but they do it in different ways and they still have different types of purposes, right? So if I drive in a nail with a sledgehammer, it's probably going to bend the nail. If I do it with a heavy ball peen hammer, I'm probably going to damage the medium or the surface of the material I'm trying to work on. And then the other thing too is that the back of a hammer all has different purposes too as well. So I think about the tools and identity in the same way, is that there's often a right tool for the job, but they all can drive in a nail. So at what point do I just grab a hammer versus finding that perfect hammer?
Right. And you know, that's the task of the best CEOs or CISOs out there, is one, they have to realize that their best hammer, their best tool in the bag is the people. If this was beneficial, if you're interested in the human aspect of identity, please like, subscribe, share, do all of those social media things. But more importantly, dial in for the next one. We're bringing an awesome guest. We're going to talk about actual real world experiences and how to influence culture within your organization from an identity lens. So thank you again for attending, and we will be in touch soon.
And remember, as Tim said, the biggest hammer in your toolbox is the people. Man, you nailed it. That was good.
Nailed it. Thank you for joining us in this episode of Authenticate This, the Cybersecurity Leadership Podcast. Check out the show notes for links and resources mentioned in today's shows. If you enjoyed the show, please leave us a 5-star review and be sure to subscribe so you don't miss on any future episodes.